Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark.
Never Alone, Volume 3, Story 1. I'm quite a stereotypical skeptic in a lot of ways, but this incident always left me wondering. My first overseas holidays was to Vietnam. I went for 2 weeks, and I would later return and stay for a year. I loved the place. Anyway, on my first visit, I was about a week and a half into the trip when my tour guide, now a very good friend, offered for me and my friends to have dinner at his house. We agreed, and we had an amazing meal that gave us real insight into Vietnamese life. His house was 3 rooms, a bedroom, living room, a laundry with a toilet, and a storage room. Now, an important detail is that this house only had one door. It was in his bedroom / living room. The house had 3 windows, one in the bathroom and 2 in his living room. The storage room had none, no doors, no windows. We had just finished dinner and we're talking when I hear very clear footsteps coming from his storage room. When I say clear, I mean so clear that there is no doubt whatsoever someone is in there. My friend and the owner of the house hear it too. He's kind of surprised, but he keeps his cool. He gets up and starts talking in Vietnamese. Hello? Who is that? The footsteps disappear. He walks in and we follow behind him. We were in central Hanoi, so I was worried it may have been an intruder. Anyway, we go into the room and there's no one. Nothing. It is then I am reminded that there are no entry or exit points in this room. To get into the storage room, you would have had to walk past us during the meal. So we discuss this and get a little concerned. We're all male, so eventually this discussion turns into macho nonsense and joking around. We continually chilling out and he goes on, he plays his favorite records. Around this time we hear it again, and this time it is past the point of undeniable. It is so obvious and so damn clear, we all spring up and get ready. The owner runs outside and gets his neighbors who were chilling in the street and they run in. So here we are. 3 Australians scared out of our minds along with about 5 Viets who look ready for war. We gather around the entrance to the storage room and the noises are still going on. Footsteps as if someone is jogging on the spot quite briskly. Tap, 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 over and over. The neighbors can't believe it as we whisper to them this is the second time it's happened. We count to 3 and run in. His cupboard door was wide open and the contents were on the floor. And nothing else. No animals, no people, nothing. We were all overwhelmed with fear. Even the neighbors who just joined us were bouncing around in shock. Every one of us knew something was in there, but now it was gone. So, we tore this tiny storage room apart. We checked the 2 cupboards, nothing. I checked the boxes in the room, nothing. We looked at the ceiling, nothing. There was nothing. This was a room no bigger than your average bathroom. No windows and no doors leading outside. If someone was in there, they would have literally had to squeeze past us to leave the house. Fast forward a few years and my good friend, the tour guide, has now left the place, gotten married, and became a father. We occasionally talk about this and we still have no idea what happened. By far the strangest thing I have ever witnessed. I still vividly remember running in and seeing his cupboard open and spewed into the ground and thinking, forget this. Story number 2. My cousin, brother, and I were going camping for a night on our family-owned property out in West Virginia. We have a couple of good 100 acres of just woodland that joins my cousin's family land. This was about 6 or 7 years ago when we were all in high school. We weren't as experienced campers as we are now, but we weren't novices either. We grew up camping and hiking with our families. If I recall correctly, this was one of our first nights in the woods without any kind of older family members with us. We were about 15 at the time. We hiked to a good place in the middle of our property and began to set up our tent. We had a large 8-person tent with 2 rooms because we thought that would be cool. Yeah, we were young and dumb. Little did we know how hard it was to find a place to set up such a large tent in the woods. The size will come into play later on in the story. We then built a fire and gathered as much wood as we thought we would need through the night and finally kicked back and enjoyed the outdoors. The sun set on us pretty late that summer night, probably somewhere around 9. We told stories and enjoyed the night sky. Around midnight, we were sitting around the fire and I noticed eyes shine in the woods. Just 2 eyes gazing at us around the fire, not moving. I became uneasy, but assured myself it was probably a deer and tried to continue on with the conversation. After a bit, I told my cousin and brother that there were eyes behind them, and I could see them. We then let our thoughts wander and became frightened. I stroked the fire up and nice and large, and my cousin threw a rock in the direction of the eyes. It didn't run away, but slowly backed out as we could hear the slight cracking of leaves as it left. Since the eyes were gone, we quickly forgot about them and continued on. About an hour later, they were back. This time, in a slightly closer position to us, angled more to the right than where it was previously. This time we noticed that they were too high off the ground to be a deer. This alarmed us again. Now we were frightened because this was our first all-alone nighter and we didn't want to go running home. The moon was now hidden behind thick clouds and the forest was silent. We knew this wasn't right. We could hear something walking away from us again as the eyes disappeared, but this time we didn't lose our nerves. We made the decision to sleep in ships. We all went to the tent, but I was staying awake first. My brother and cousin went out cold quickly. I was on extra alert for some reason and didn't like the feeling I got while sitting in the tent. I made my way back out to the fire and restoked it to give me some confidence. And wouldn't you know it, something was watching me again. This horrible feeling came over me. The feeling that so many times people describe. Something in me was screaming that it was time to go. I made some fickle attempts to scare whatever it was by throwing some rocks and even a small flaming log. It no longer left when I did that. So I made a dash to the tent, got my cousin and brother, and we decided to leave out of there quickly. Whatever it was slowly followed us for a couple hundred yards before we left it behind. We slept on our front porch that night and returned for the tent when we woke up with the sun beaming in our face. We had slept only about 4 hours. When we made it to the location, we found a smashed and destroyed tent. Each pole holding the tent was snapped in half in numerous places. Remember, this is an 8-person tent, meaning big poles. Nothing was torn like if a wild animal had done it. It was almost like a warning from something or someone. I don't know what it was that night. It certainly could have been a person, but that raises the question of why they were out on private land that late at night. And why would they have done that to our tent? I guess it could have been an animal as well, but the way the poles were broken seemed too precise. I'm not sure what it was, but it made our first solo camping experience one that we never forgot. Next story. I took a good friend, a colleague, to lunch a few weeks ago. A few minutes into our conversation, I began telling him about a project that I had been managing in a remote area of central Utah called Book Cliffs. This is a large geographical region with almost no full-time human inhabitants. The area is mostly a semi-arid to arid plateau crisscrossed by deep canyons, but there are also some moderately tall mountains, 8,000 to 9,000 feet high, covered by fairly expansive pinyon pine, spruce, and even aspen forests. My friend is one of the most respected and senior geologists in the state of Utah. He's a very disciplined scientist and researcher and an incredibly logical thinker. He's an amazing guy, but there isn't a single particle of superstition or irrationality in his body. You might imagine my surprise then when, instead of asking me about the details of the project, he asked, "Have you seen anything strange out there yet?" I asked him what he meant by strange and expected him to say something like, gem-bearing pegmatites or fully articulated elasmosaurus remains. Instead, he said, like Bigfoot or UFOs. I laughed out loud. I was positive he was joking. This guy's famous in the local geology community for his totally dry sense of humor. I was sure he was yanking my chain. I expected him to eventually crack a smile, but he didn't. He just sat there stone-faced. Then after a few moments of what appeared to be serious hesitation, he began telling me a story that I would have known was complete fiction had it been told by just about any other person I have ever known. His story took place when he was 16 years old. His father, a prominent local geologist, had won a small contract to map and explore a fairly large tract of wilderness within the Book Cliffs area. Naturally, my friend was conscripted as free or nearly free labor to help his father and his uncle complete the project over the course of what they assumed would be an entire summer. As the youngest, fittest member of the troop, my friend was often told to hike up and down ridges, into and out of box canyons, and over and around mountains, all with a large surveyor stick in one hand and a heavy 1960s vintage armed surplus walkie-talkie in the other so that his grandfather and uncle could record elevations at key points in the topography. He often found himself bushwhacking through thick juniper, pinyon, pine, and aspen forest, several miles off of any trail, hundreds of yards away from his father and uncle. He said he felt like someone or something was around nearly all the time, just out of sight. A few days into the job, my friend and his little group returned to their camp at the end of the day to find it had been totally ransacked. They all assumed it had been done by bears. They tidied up and thought very little more about it. The next day, my friend was told to bushwhack to the bottom of a deep wooded ravine while his father and uncle remained at the top. He stood in an opening in the base of the ravine, holding a surveyor stick for measurement, when he heard something big making its way through the timber somewhere downhill from him. He looked a couple of hundred yards down the ravine and saw what looked like, at that distance, a really big bearded man wearing brown buckskin trousers and a buckskin shirt, the kind with long leather strings hanging from the arms and legs, making his way through the trees away from him. He watched the man for a moment, but had to take his eyes off him for a few minutes in order to concentrate on his job. When he had a moment to look towards the man again, he had disappeared. When he'd gotten to the top of the ravine again, my friend asked his dad and uncle if they had seen the man. They hadn't, but they claimed to have heard something move through the timber and brush near the bottom of the ravine as my friend began hiking. Of course, both of the older men seemed totally unconcerned. My friend, however, was totally creeped out by the idea of some weird dude wandering around a place as remote as the Book Cliffs on foot and dressed from head to toe in buckskin. They went back to their camp that night and were woken by howling and sticks being thrown at their tent. They fired a few shots into the air, and whatever was stopped and appeared to flee on foot. A couple of weeks went by without incident. Then one morning my friend found himself hiking up the side of a mountain in a fairly dense pine stand. As he approached the summit, he heard something crash through trees in front of him. He assumed it was probably a deer or an elk, so he kept going without caution. As he broke out of the stand, he saw a large man moving quickly up the side of the mountain about 100 yards ahead of him. At first glance, he thought it was the same man that he had seen wearing brown buckskin. At that close range, though, he could see that it wasn't buckskin with strings hanging from its arms and legs. It was long brown hair. He said he couldn't believe his eyes, and that he might not to this day had his father's voice not crackled over the old walkie-talkie, telling him to head back that way they had come, that they had seen it too. Needless to say, he did need to be asked twice. They were in the Book Cliffs for another couple of months, but never saw the man or creature again. He's been back to the area countless times, hoping in vain to spot whatever it was. He said that in addition to his Bigfoot sightings, they also saw strange white orbs at night. He said they would float up and down the high ridges for hours at a time, but none of them ever came closer than a few hundred yards. He says he'd seen this several times since. In any event, I thought it was very strange to hear such an unbelievable story from such an incredibly believable character. Next story. About 14 years ago, I relocated from the Gulf Coast area to East Texas to join my then boyfriend, who was tired of living and working in the big city and wanted to move back to his college and post-college stomping grounds. His name Rex, which I'm changing to respect his privacy, had an old country house that he rented for many years from a man who owned thousands of acres of land several miles outside of town in the piney woods of East Texas. Some of the land was grazing pasture, but most of it was heavily wooded with mixed hardwoods, pine, scrub, etc. He rented that house spanned well over 20 years. He lived in it initially, and then when he moved away, he kept it, just to have a weekend getaway place, and we both moved into it for a while. Just to get to this house, you had to drive 7 miles from town into the country, then take a dirt road, good old red Texas dirt, off the highway that went for about a mile and a half before it ended in a T-section, where you had to turn and drive yet another mile before coming toward a 45-degree bend in the road. To the left of that bend was a locked cattle gate blocking the narrow road that led to Rex's house. From that gate to his house was another half mile. There were no street lights. These were just country dirt roads, very rutted, that traversed all through the piney woods. When we were just going there on the weekends, we would sometimes go up on Friday night after work, and it would be dark by the time we got to the locked gates. Since Rex was usually the one driving, I would be the one nominated to get out of the truck and fumble with a padlock combination in the dark, with just the truck headlights to see by. This was before the nifty clip-on LED lights, so it would have been very difficult to hold a regular flashlight in one hand while trying to fumble with the combination and pull the lock free from the chain that was wrapped through the gate and fence post with the other hand. I'll be honest, from the time we left the hard pavement of the highway and turned down the first road, my heart would start to beat faster and my palms would get damp. I never could explain why. I just hated those dark roads. So by the time we'd get to the gate, my heart was usually in my throat by then. There was somewhat of a ditch on either side of the gate, and tall, thick weeds filled up both sides. I always felt uneasy there, though I never saw anything. Once unlocked, Rex drove the truck through the gate, and I'd fumble in the light of the taillights to make sure that the chain was secure and the lock snapped tight. The man that owned all the land out there was adamant that the gate stayed locked at all times. We had one last half-mile stretch to get to the house, and once we got to the house and unloaded the car and I was safe inside, I'd feel that I could finally breathe. The house had a wood stove, and Rex kept a pretty good supply of split logs and kindling on the covered front porch. On weekends, we would tidy up around the place, and one day, as I tidied up the wood pile and swept off the porch, a piece of old alligator gar skull, something Rex had found on one of his walks, had fallen far behind a 3-foot-high wood stack as I tied it up, and I just left it there rather than move all the wood again. One Saturday when we arrived at the house, that piece of bone was lying out on the porch. I thought it was odd, but just shrugged it off and thought an animal might have gotten in the wood pile and dug it out. The skull was old and bleached out, and I'm not sure there was much edible interest in it, so I don't know about what a possum or any other animal would want with it. It did look like it had been carefully laid there as though someone had looked at it and then laid it down. There was not any fresh chip marks on it and no pieces missing. It was a possum or raccoon, if that was that. They must have been pretty strong to move all that wood. Sometime within the next few weeks or month after discovering the skull, our nearest neighbor in the country, another 3/4 mile further past our house, called Rex at his home in the city and said they noticed water running along down the length of the house and out into the road. They were on their way to work that morning and saw it and said they had not noticed any water on the road the evening before when they came home from work. They stopped and investigated for us, knowing we were all there on the weekends only at this point, and found the outside water faucet near the back of the house had been turned on. This was puzzling because Rex was very meticulous to turn the water off at the main before we leave to drive back home on Sundays. The main cutoff was set below the ground in a concrete housing at the front of the house and had a lid covering it. There were several 100-year-old oak trees around the front of the house, so the ground is perpetually carpeted in dead leaves, and no one would know where the water main was, unless they had watched Rex go to it to turn the water off or on. We were definitely scratching our heads over this, but made doubly sure to turn it off at the main every time before leaving to drive back to the city. Another afternoon, late on Sunday, before we headed home, we were sitting out back in the house in lawn chairs, just trying to enjoy what remained of our last hours of the weekend. Rex had fallen asleep in his chair, and I closed my eyes when I was enjoying the late afternoon sun. My reverie was interrupted by what sounded like a lion. The roar was very deep and throaty, just like you hear at the zoo or in a jungle movie on TV. I sat bolt upright and glanced over at Rex. He apparently had not heard it, and never blinked. It didn't sound extremely close, but like it was within 100, maybe 200 yards. It only sounded once, and it had a sort of reverberation to it. It reminded me of the sound the T-Rex made on Jurassic Park. I've heard cougars and bobcats before, and it didn't sound remotely like those. I know there were supposedly cougars in the piney woods, and we had coyotes and bobcats too, but this roar sounded different than those. It was so much louder and deeper. So fast forward, us having moved to the house full time by the beginning of the summer. Being birders, we used to take walks with our dog and take our binoculars. Down about a 1/4 mile from our house was an old overgrown road logging trail created many years ago when the landowner had some of his acreage logged. We used to walk down that road from our house regularly to birdwatch and give our dog some exercise. We would stroll a half mile down the road before heading back home. One day we headed down that logging road and didn't get very far when we smelled a god-awful stench, like something had died. Expecting to see turkey buzzards, always plentiful out there in country, circling around, there was nary a buzzard anywhere that we could see. In fact, there wasn't anything stirring that day. Everything was eerily quiet. We neither heard nor saw anything moving. We had plenty of coyotes living around there. We'd often hear them at night. So it's unusual for anything dead to stay around long enough to start stinking in those woods. There were plenty of things that would dispose of them quickly. We couldn't see anything, so we kept walking. We got about 50 yards or so down the trail, and right in the middle of it was a huge pile of excrement. There haven't been any bears seen or reported here in this particular area of Texas. The feces looked human. It did not look like deer or cougar bobcat's got. If it had been from a coyote, I can't imagine how big the coyote would have been to produce scat that large. We avoided the poop and continued on down, and still no wildlife movement or sounds. We didn't go as far as we usually do, and Rex wanted to turn around and head back. Looking back on it now, it was though he seemed uncomfortable. On the way back, Rex was searching the trees with his binoculars, and I was strolling slowly ahead about 15 yards. I felt something small hit my head and fall to the ground at my feet. I looked down to see a pea-sized rock. I looked up to the sky wondering why a rock would fall from the sky, and wondering what the odds that it would land on me. But there was nothing in the sky, and I looked around and saw nothing to explain where the rock came from. Another oddity I just ended up blowing off. A few days later, we were sitting on the front porch drinking our morning coffee when I noticed something laying on top of the wooden post on the side of the walkway that leads up to the porch. The post was part of a small wire fence that used to run across the front boundary of the house. We passed that post every day going out to the road for our walks, and there had never been anything on it before. I walked out to see what it was, and there in the absolutely perfect center of the post was a small colorful shell like a tiny little seashell, yellow and sort of pretty. It couldn't have more perfectly centered in the post in the middle of the concentric rings of the wooden post. On their way home from work later that same day, our neighbors saw us sitting on the porch and stopped for a minute in the road to say hello. I asked them if they might have left the shell there for us, but they didn't know anything about it. At night, Rex and I would often sit on the front porch in the cool of the evening after dinner. There was an old vapor light, the kind that gives off that greenish-gray color, at the corner of the front of the property, about 20 feet from the road, running in front of our house, giving us enough visibility to see a small stretch of road from left to right. There was an 80 to 100-year-old red oak tree about 20 feet from the porch, to the right of the walkway as you were sitting on the porch looking out, that blocked a portion of the view of the road as it disappeared into the dark and the foliage of the trees that lined the road. That vapor light was partially obscured by the branches of another oak between us and the cool evening breeze. We were there for a few minutes talking, and all of a sudden we hear a voice coming from somewhere down on the road and to our right. The voice, a male, called out, "Hey," like someone would call out to hail a friend from a distance. But whoever called out didn't pronounce it "hey," as in "hey there," when you're walking towards a friend, you know, it was just "hey." The voice was reasonably loud and sounded like less than 50 yards away, and definitely like it was calling to us. It startled both of us, and our dog came to our feet and stood erect on the porch next to me, but didn't bark and didn't move a muscle off that porch to go see who the voice belonged to. She loves to chase squirrels and will bark at the sound of an approaching car, including our neighbor's Jeep, as they come down the road. But she loved our neighbors dearly, and when she knows it's them, she would trot off the porch to go welcome them when they pulled up. But she didn't move anything except her ears, straining to hear more from where the voice came from. Rex called out, "Hey," in return. Both of us now alert yet confused, wondering why our neighbors would be walking down to our house in the dark. It didn't sound like Mr. and Mrs. J, and they never came to our house uninvited and never walked anywhere. They would have traveled in their Jeep, and they never went anywhere late at night. There was no response to Rex's call out, and yet we sat looking intently at the road in front of the house in the dim light expecting our neighbors to walk out of the darkness and up to our walkway. Several seconds passed, then nothing. Our dog didn't move, ears still poised. I whispered to Rex, "Was that Jay?" He whispered back that he didn't know, but it didn't sound like him. A few minutes later, and we realized that who or whatever called out to us wasn't going to reveal himself. After about 5 minutes of silence, Rex said abruptly, "Let's go inside." We went in the house with our dog, and Rex locked the door behind us. We talked about the mysterious voice for several minutes and how strange it was. It made no sense that our neighbors would come down that pitch-black road in the dark at night uninvited and call out, "Hey," and hide. We ruled out a hunt or two because it would be suicide to walk around on very remote private property at night and risk getting shot by the homeowner. The land around there is so choppy with ragged terrain, barbed wire, marshy creeks, etc., that no one would dare traverse around there that far away from anywhere in the pitch black at night. A hunter certainly wouldn't call out to someone sitting on their porch and then not come up and say hello or show themselves. No one in that area does that kind of thing. If some hunter was poaching and was deliberately sneaking about, he wouldn't draw attention to himself by calling out to us. The fact that our dog did not bark or use your alarm or go tearing off the porch to address whoever was down there made the matter all the more confusing and unsettling. Needless to say, we flagged down our neighbors the next afternoon as they returned home from work and asked if they had tried to come for a visit the night before. We explained what we heard, and they just shook their heads, puzzled as we were. The husband showed definite concern as he confirmed the gate at the end of the road was locked when they came in the previous afternoon. I observed other things that summer. Teepee-like stick structures placed in tree limbs in the woods behind the house, as well as small saplings that had been bent and weighed with a log or something to create an archway over the pathway. I thought to myself, how does nature create these oddities on its own? They looked like they were deliberately placed that way, but it made no sense, since there was no one else living out there, and no storms or windy weather to explain the archways and patterns of the limb placements. I always got creeped out walking in the woods behind the house, even though it was fairly bright and sunny when it filtered through the treetops. We only explored back there once or twice, and I never wanted to go back out there again. One night, a friend called and asked if they could come out to the house to look for owls. Rex and I walked with him down the road as he did owl calls, and then we would stop and listen. We had lots of owls living out there and heard them almost every night. We didn't get down the road too far, and I just got an overwhelming sense of dread and fear and told the guys I was going back to the house. They just laughed and tried to reassure me. They were out there with me, so I would be fine. But I just couldn't go any further and hurried back up the road until I could see the house in the vapor light, then sprinted all the way to the front porch. If you take these incidents one at a time, they are trivial, except for the voice. That was particularly troubling, and I tended to brush them off and didn't dwell on it. It wasn't until I moved back to the city and accidentally stumbled onto some websites that I began to wonder if all the incidents were related. I found many stories similar to mine about some of the things I saw and experienced that now make me wonder if we had a Bigfoot or perhaps a Bigfoot family living out there with us. Many years later now, I've spoken with Rex, we remained friends, about some of the incidents and told him what I was beginning to conclude. He said he wouldn't be a bit surprised, as many of his college friends had weird experiences out there when they were all hanging out back in the college days. He said he just chalked some of it up to them smoking too much wacky tobacco, but something had definitely scared them a few times. He also told me about a scream or roar he heard one night while he was asleep in bed. He said it was so deep and so loud he'd never heard anything like it before or since. He said he thought later it might have been a cougar because he heard they could scream, but he said he could feel it and vibrate in his body all the way into the house. Even though all these events were seemingly unrelated and insignificant, they stuck in my mind all these years, and when I spoke with Rex recently, he clearly remembered each event too. Like something just wasn't quite right, but we couldn't put our finger on it. It wasn't until many years later that I accidentally tumbled across a Bigfoot informational website that described very similar oddities experienced by other people. Bigfoot was never even on my radar then. Rex has long moved out of the house, and the last we heard, the house was bulldozed over. The property is still private, and our neighbors moved out long ago. I wish I could go back and look around again, now that I understand what to be looking for. I suppose a person could have done the things I described, but they'd have to have really gone out of their way to get to our house way out there, and they had to know they ran a huge risk of getting shot for trespassing. Plus, why would they even bother doing some of those things? It just made no sense. Our neighbors were kind, decent people, and not ones to play tricks on us, and they always kept an eye out on our property when we weren't around. So, I guess I'll never know who or what it was. Next story. Many years ago, I worked as a bar manager for an English-style restaurant and pub. The restaurant was acclaimed and had originally been an old house that had been converted many years previous. The downstairs was a restaurant and the upstairs was a beautiful English pub. An apartment had been added to the top of the two-story house during the house-to-restaurant conversion. It was basically an efficiency-style location with a bedroom, living room, and kitchen all in one large area, and a bathroom. It also had a small laundry room at the opposite end. The owners used the apartment in the early days for their personal use, to have a place to entertain privately or retreat for rest or shower if needed, or even staying the night if the entertaining got out of hand. The laundry room had a washer, dryer, and an ironing board in the early days. Someone was employed to wash, dry, and iron all the table linens for the restaurant. The pub upstairs closed at 2 a.m. every night of the week. When the restaurant waitstaff was finished for the night, they would lock up the downstairs entry doors, punch out for the night, and would leave the lights on in the salad prep area across the hallway from the kitchen. For safety precautions, the restaurant also contracted with off-duty city cops to patrol our parking lot and to be there in case anyone got out of hand at the bar. They came on duty from 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. every night. My first year working there, I began to hear from some of the employees of some ghostly goings-on about the place. Their experiences each sounded sincere and frightening in their telling, and several of them were still wigged out about what they saw or felt. The general consensus was that it was the owner's son who had committed suicide while up in the apartment by himself one evening. The owner and his wife had gone out with friends that evening, and they had even invited their son, then in his early 20s, to join them, but he declined. He apparently suffered with depression, and he hung himself up in the apartment while his parents were out. So, on to my experience. It was a slow Monday night, and all the staff and customers had left for the evening. And it was just me, the cop on duty, and one cocktail waitress who had already clocked out for the night but had stayed on to have a drink and flirt with a cop. They were sitting at the bar area while I was closing out the register for the night, and then I went downstairs to lock up the night's receipts and clock out, leaving the two sitting at the bar talking. I went out of the bar, down the hallway and down the stairs, put the receipts and the money in the safe, and then walked into the kitchen to punch out. The only lights on down there came from the salad prep area, which is across the hall from the kitchen, but the light was plenty sufficient to see around the kitchen area clearly. As I grabbed my time card from the rack on the wall, I suddenly felt all prickly and electric, and the hair on my arms and neck stood straight up. At that point, I was sliding the time card in, and I heard a person whistle just a few feet behind me. It was two tones, up, down, like you would say, uh-oh, but as a whistle. It was human, not machine. At that point, it took every fiber of my being to force myself to turn around slowly and confront whoever was behind me. There was no one there. It was completely empty. I surveyed the whole area. All the equipment was completely turned off for the night, and the only other exit door was at the end of the hallway. There was nowhere for someone to hide in there. No one could have slipped in without walking right by me. The back door was locked, too, because I had just checked it before going into the kitchen. By now my heart was in my throat, but I deliberately scanned the room completely to confirm there was no one hiding in there. Once I realized there was not, I still had to turn off the lights in the salad prep area before I could head back upstairs to the pub. I flicked the first switch off, and then I came to the second light switch and flipped that switch, knowing that now it would be dark behind me, and the only light left for me to see by was coming from the stairway a short distance away. By now, I had put my fear into overdrive, and when I got to the stairs, I was literally leaping, taking them two at a time, racing to the top. But I had one last light over the stairs to flick off as I sailed by, once I got to the top. Now, I was running, and by the time I rounded the corner into the barroom, both the cop and the waitress were still sitting at the bar and looked up in surprise at me clomping into the room. They took one look at my face. I must have been as pale as a sheet, and they both asked what was wrong. I started to jump all over them for somehow managing to play a practical joke on me, but I knew there was just no way they physically could have pulled that off in that short time and somehow got past me without me hearing or seeing either of them. There was only one way down and into that kitchen. They both looked alarmed and said they'd been sitting right there the whole time. When I explained what happened, it was the cop, who, as a big-ass gun in his holster, by the way, who jumped up obviously nervous and was ready to get the hell out of there. It's sort of funny now, but at the time it wasn't. We hurried down the pub stairs that came out on the breezeway that led into the parking lot. I locked the stairway door, unlocked the office to set the security alarm for the night, locked it up tight, and we all made a beeline out of the parking lot. I do not have a practical theory for who or what whistled at me that night, and I examined everything in the kitchen in detail the next day for a possible explanation. What was convincing me that this was the real deal was that weird static energy I felt just before the whistle came. When I told one of the other employees, who had some experiences of her own, what happened to me, she said she had a creepy feeling, too, about the kitchen. Next story. I once had a business partner who was perhaps the most level-headed, most no-nonsense person I've ever known. Not into the occult or the supernatural or any of that stuff. Never saw Bigfoot or any other kind of cryptid, just solid to the core. Once, and only once, he told me a story from his early teens when his father was a provost marshal for a large military base in the southeastern U.S. Particular interest to the story, the base included several locations in which nuclear weapons were stored. One early morning, say about 3 a.m., his father received a call, got up and dressed and left the house. Didn't come back to the house for until early next morning. Next time he saw his father, he asked him what it was about because the base was business as usual the day, as best as he could tell. His father told him not to tell anybody, but there had been a UFO sighting over the base. A UFO in the sense that there was a flying object that they couldn't identify. The interesting part was that it flew over the base and hovered at each location where the nuclear weapons were stored for several minutes and then flew off. They apparently never could figure out what it was, and the fighter support scrambled from the local airbase couldn't ever even get close enough to see what it was. Stories like that from people like that keep me open-minded. Next story. When I was 10 or 12 years old, we were stationed in Schofield Barracks on the island of Oahu. Almost every weekend, we went to a beach on the North Shore for an afternoon of collecting shells, snorkeling, etc. There was a small lagoon surrounded by a coral reef with various small pools, and then about 100 yards out, the deeper blue. I was not a great swimmer, but was okay with my snorkel. One day, my older sister and I somehow got beyond the reef and were battling some pretty choppy waves. On top of this, my sister was planking me by hopping on and dunking me. Suddenly, the mouthpiece separated, and I took in a huge gulp of water. I started panicking and thrashing about, but could not resurface. I was going down. Suddenly, I felt some arms come around my waist and start lifting me. When I got to the surface, I was in the grasp of a big Hawaiian snorkeler, as also was my sister, in the arms of another. I had not seen anyone else around us before then. They took us all the way back to shore. My dad had seen the whole thing happen from there and rushed down the beach to thank the men. They just carried us up out of the water and then, without saying a word, turned around and swam off. To this day, I'm convinced they were angels in human form. I've had several instances in my life where miraculous timing and interventions kept me from kicking the bucket early.